We've heard famous words from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. We hear these famous and familiar words of Jesus. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, it happened again the other night. Maria and I were attending an event at the Arts Center in Irving. As we handed our tickets to the usher, she asked how we were doing. "Oh, fine, thank you," we said politely before returning the courtesy. "And how are you?" "Blessed," the usher answered. "I'm blessed." I don't know about you, but I generally have two reactions when people say that. First, I feel guilty for not having said it myself. It's the kind of guilt that you feel at Christmas time when someone shows up on your door with a Christmas present for you and you don't have one, and then it's too late and you kind of mumble thank you and you feel really stupid and greedy. Well, that's the kind of guilt I feel. I mean, I feel guilty because I am blessed. I'm fortunate to live where I live. I'm fortunate to do the work that I do. I'm fortunate to be married to Maria. The list could go on and on. Of course, the old hymn says to count your many blessings, name them one by one. But if I were to do that this morning, there wouldn't be much time left for the sermon. Some of you wish that were the case. Given that I am blessed, I feel guilty that I don't say it when people ask, "How are you?" And then the second thing that I feel is a sense of wonder. When I reflect on the many times other people have told me that they are blessed, I wonder that they can say it so freely and confidently. And I wonder at them because to look at them, you wouldn't think that they are blessed. I mean, the lady who said it the other night was an usher. She was taking tickets, helping people find their seats. No one came to the theater to see her, and yet she was blessed. The week before, the man who said he was blessed was a porter at the rehab hospital where I was visiting someone. His job was simply to move patients' beds, to help people get in and out of their wheelchairs. He wasn't the surgeon who restored someone's life. He wasn't the physical therapist who was helping them to walk, and yet he was blessed. But I'm always most struck when I go to the Alston Street Center or to the Stew Pot or to the bridge and work with homeless men and women. "How are you doing?" I'll ask, just to make conversation, not really wanting to know how hard it is, in fact, to live on the streets or sleep in a shelter or depend on the charity and permission of other people to eat or take a shower regularly or even to do one's laundry. "How are you doing?" I'll say almost offhandedly, and more often than not, the response is, "I'm blessed." Now, I could understand and I could even forgive if the answer was, I'm angry, or I'm lonely, or I'm hurt, or I'm depressed. Of course you are. You're homeless, but you're not blessed. Not blessed because, as Charles James Cook points out, we live in a time when blessings are given to those who succeed, and often at the expense of others. So I chalk up my guilt and my sense of wonder to cognitive dissonance, that mental phenomenon where our beliefs don't match up neatly with reality. Because when the usher and the porter and the homeless people and Jesus talk about being blessed, what they're talking about and how I think of being blessed don't quite mesh. I mean, when Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, I wonder if John Kerry and all the other diplomats trying to work out a peaceful end to the civil war in Syria really feel blessed. I imagine they mostly feel frustrated. Or how about, blessed are those who mourn? I think of all the families I've worked with who have had to bury someone they love, or who have long mourned a lost spouse or parent or child. When I ask them how they're doing, none of them say, oh, I feel blessed. And I don't imagine that anyone who is persecuted for righteousness' sake feels blessed on that account. I think they just feel persecuted. I would, anyway. It doesn't help that one way to translate the Greek word for blessed is happy, as in happy are the poor in spirit, happy are the meek, happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. None of those things would make me very happy. Fortunate, another possible translation, isn't much better. Fortunate are the merciful, fortunate are the pure in heart, fortunate are you when people revile you and utter all kinds of false things against you. Pious, maybe, devout, even, the pure in heart and the poor in spirit are the really religious folks, but I don't know that I would call them fortunate. Not in today's social climate. Try being pure in heart in high school and see where that gets you. So what is Jesus talking about in these things that we call the Beatitudes? One approach to Jesus' words is to say that in Matthew 5, Jesus gives us truths that, if applied to our attitude, will help us climb to higher altitudes in God. It's the psychological approach, one that says, if I do these things, I will have a better attitude, and thus I will be a better person. Possibly, but I doubt it. I mean, when you think about it, few people get a better attitude as the result of having people revile them and utter all kinds of evil against them falsely on Jesus' account. Another approach is to take the Beatitudes as ethical guidelines or moral operating principles. The only problem with this approach, as I see it, is that it isn't clear how mourning or being poor in spirit, for example, is an ethical guideline for much of anything. Another way to see the Beatitudes is as a set of spiritual promises. I mean, all of them conclude with some sort of promise being made, and I suppose then there is some merit to that, but then you have to ask about the intent behind our behavior. Should I hunger and thirst for righteousness, knowing that I'm going to get filled because I do so? Or am I really being meek if I know that in being meek, I'm going to inherit the earth? Somehow that doesn't quite go with being humble. You know, I suppose that after 12 years of preaching on this passage on the Beatitudes, I ought to have figured it out. I ought to have an answer. I ought to know what they mean. But I don't. The best is I look at being meek and merciful. I think about being poor in spirit and pure in heart. I envision someone hungering and thirsting for righteousness and then being persecuted for righteousness' sake. And the picture I get is a picture of Jesus. If being poor in spirit is knowing that your life is fundamentally not your own, if it means being aware of your complete dependence on God, then I see Jesus, who knew that we do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. If those who mourn truly are blessed, then I remember that Jesus wept at the tomb of his friend Lazarus. And if mourning involves not just personal grief, but also sadness for the sinful state of the world, then I think of Jesus who prayed, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." If meekness is not timidity or passivity, as Tom Long explains, but rather a patient trusting that God will act in due time, an insistence on being nonviolent even in a violent society, then I remember that, as the prophet said, Jesus will not break a bruised reed, and a burning wick he will not quench until he brings justice to victory. If to hunger and to thirst for righteousness is to be passionate about doing God's justice, then I watch as Jesus healed the sick and fed the hungry and comforted the lonely and brought hope to those who despaired. I know that in Jesus' ministry, the haughty were humbled and the lowly were lifted up. If the merciful are happy, fortunate, blessed, it is because they share in one of the primary attributes of God. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, Jesus said, calling forth love, not legalism. I can see him being merciful every time he'd embrace a child, or open blind eyes, or calm raging seas. If Jesus doesn't define what it means to be pure in heart, I don't know who does. Is every thought, every word, every action was pure love? Being pure in heart characterizes people of integrity whose moral uprightness extends to their inmost being and whose actions and intentions correspond. Blessed are the peacemakers, Jesus said, and Jesus was a peacemaker, for in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things by making peace through the blood of his cross. And speaking of the cross, if being blessed involves being persecuted for righteousness' sake, then Jesus is blessed indeed. As we heard Paul write to the Corinthians this morning, Christ Jesus became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption when he suffered crucifixion and death. And blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil things falsely against you, Jesus said. And we know that at the end of his ministry, the leaders of his own people sought his life. They arrested him. He was subjected to mocking and torment. At his trial, people gave false testimony against him. As he hung upon the cross, the crowds reviled him, hurling at him torment and abuse because he said he was the Son of God. Foolishness to those of us who are perishing, but to those who believe it is the way of life, it is life and a life everlasting. My friends, I don't know whether the Beatitudes are ethical guidelines or moral operating principles or spiritual promises. I suppose they're a little of each. What I do know is that the Beatitudes describe Jesus. And I know that you and I are invited, are called to follow Jesus, to learn from him in order to be like him. And I think if we try to live as Jesus lived, if we seek to be meek and merciful, if we mourn the sin of the world and attempt making peace, if we aim to be poor in spirit and pure in heart, we will be blessed, just as Jesus said. Blessed are they, is what Jesus said. It is what we sing. May we stand together and sing from the faith we sing, number 215.